one of the first things I thought about was, what will I talk about? What will the title of the sermon be? Oh boy, what have I done now? Can I really do this? I have to tell you that leading the God's Choice services gave me some courage to preach this morning. I look around and what do I see? I see bachelor's degrees. I see master's degrees. I see PhDs. I see college administrators, teachers, business people. I see nurses. I see wonderful mothers and fathers. I see my friends and my church family. I also see people who are a lot smarter than I am. So, what do you see? You see a really nervous 73-year-old man. Just an ordinary 73-year-old man. But I am praying that God will use this ordinary man to say something that might motivate you to change from an ordinary person into an extraordinary person for God. So what does extraordinary mean? Extraordinary, very unusual or remarkable. Let me start with a little story from my life. When I was working for BFI, I had a boss, Jim Cosman. And some of you guys can see the pictures that are being passed around. I think it's important when you name somebody to have an idea what they look like. So Jim, he was a former professional baseball player. How he got in the garbage, I don't know, but anyway. But Jim stood 6'4". Now, that's very intimidating to a man my size. One day, at a big corporate event, Jim's boss said, Jim, it's shoot, ready, aim. And I thought that was correct because that's what Jim did lots of times. He had ways about him that would just drive people nuts. And he was a real character. One day, I was talking with one of my coworkers who knew Jim well. I asked him, why does Jim make the goals so high? That just frustrates people. My coworker explained, he knows people will have a hard time hitting the numbers, but his real goal is this, is for people to be better today than yesterday and be better tomorrow than today. Well, that's a goal that's possible for everyone if you work at it just a little bit. We actually kept track of every element in the business in order to keep on target. Tracking sheets were posted in everywhere so people could see them. Every department was posted. So what more motivation do you need? No one wants to see their name or their department showing up with poor results. He wanted us professionally and personally to change from ordinary into extraordinary. This was one of his ways to work at that goal. I learned so much from Jim. So let's look at a few ordinary people in the Bible. Moses, David, and the disciples. How God took ordinary men, maybe even less than ordinary, and made them into extraordinary people. First, we'll look at Moses. Pharaoh feared the Israelites were going to become too powerful, so he declared, and Dale will read for us from Exodus chapter 1, verses 22 through Exodus 2, 1 through 3, 1 through 10.
Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people. Every Hebrew boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. Now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put him among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the weeds and sent her female slave to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying and she felt sorry for him. This is one of the Hebrew babies, she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you? Yes, go, she answered. So the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you. So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, I drew him out of the water.
Talk about a plan that came together. Moses' mother was praying that her son would not be killed, that somehow he might live. As it turned out, not only did he live, Moses' mother was actually paid for taking care of Moses. What a deal that is. Wow. Did you remember that Pharaoh's daughter was actually the one that named him Moses? I drew him out of the water. Moses became her son. This is an amazing story. Can you imagine what Pharaoh said to his daughter when he discovered that his daughter had rescued a Hebrew baby boy after he had decreed that all the baby boys were to be killed? I can only guess he was not a happy camper. But she is his daughter, so what's the harm if she would raise him? What could Moses do? He's just one more of those Hebrews. No big deal. What harm could it do? So Dale will continue to read Exodus 2.
One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Looking this way and that and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand.
So who is Moses now? Moses is a murderer, a quick-tempered man with no self-control. Remember, he threw the Ten Commandment tablets onto the ground, breaking them into pieces when he saw these Israelites worshiping the golden calf. He buried an Egyptian in the sand to cover up his murderous deed so that no one would find out. But someone did see him. Oh boy, now what's he going to do? So he becomes a fugitive, fleeing to another country. Is this how we think of Moses today? A murderer? A quick-tempered man? A man with no self-control? A man who tried to cover up his sin? A fugitive? I don't think so. Moses is everything but an extraordinary man. Surely he is not someone that you would think would be used by God. But God's not done with him yet. Okay, Dale's going to read some more for us, Exodus 3, 7, and Exodus 3, 10.
Now God appears to Moses in the burning bush. God said, he has seen the misery of my people, heard their cries, and I am concerned about their suffering. So now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt.
Now, I guess Moses thought to himself, boy, if I had just not investigated that burning bush. Now, what can I do to get out of this mess I got myself into? So, Moses starts to make excuses to God. Number one, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Number two, the Israelites won't listen to me. Number three, what am I to tell the Israelites? Number four, what if they don't believe me? Number five, I have never been elegant. Number six, I am slow of speech. Number seven, please send someone else. Sounds like the same excuses we use today. Let someone else do it. I'm not qualified. Perhaps we think to ourselves, I will look foolish. And if I try and I fail, what will people think? So what was Moses' response to Moses' excuses? What was God's response to Moses' excuses? It comes in Exodus 4, verse 14, the Lord's anger burned against Moses. And God said, Moses' brother Aaron would speak for Moses. God's anger burned against Moses. What if God's anger burned against me? For me, that's a very scary thought. I don't know how you feel, but I'm guessing you don't want to find out either. So God took this less than ordinary man, a murderer, a man with a quick temper, a man with no self-control, a fugitive, and chose him to lead God's people out of slavery to freedom in spite of Moses' objections. So Moses was turned into an extraordinary man, a man chosen by God for some of the most important events in biblical history. Now let's look at David. This is an interesting story. Saul is king of Israel, and Ron Weir will read for us.
For Samuel 15, 2 to 3. This is what the Lord Almighty says. I will punish the Amalekites for what they did to Israel when they waylaid them as they came up from Egypt. Now go, attack the Amalekites, and totally destroy all that belongs to them. Do not spare them. Put to death men and women, children and infants, cattle and sheep, camels and donkeys.
But Saul disobeyed God. By not killing everything, he brought back their king and the best of the cattle. God wasn't happy. He told Samuel that he had regretted he had made Saul king because Saul had turned away from him and had not carried out his instructions. So God sent Samuel to King Saul. Samuel told Saul the bad news. It wasn't a pleasant conversation. It was quite the opposite. God regretted he made Saul king. Wow. So God sent Samuel to Jesse's house so that Samuel could choose the next king from one of Jesse's eight sons. So Jesse, he paraded seven of his sons before Samuel. All seven were rejected. Ron?
1 Samuel 16:7. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.
Now, this just happens to be the theme of God's choice. How many of you knew that? I think a lot of you did. Jesse had one more son for Samuel to see. So Jesse sent for young David. Jesse probably thought this is a waste of time. We all know that the youngest son is the least important son in the fifth in the family. There's no way David will be chosen king. So here comes David, the youngest son of eight, walking in from the fields. David was just a young man, maybe even a teenager. David's job was to tend the sheep in the fields. This is probably the lowest job anybody had to do. Tending sheep was very boring, very dusty, and a very nasty job, especially for a young man. Hours and hours, days and days with nothing to do except shoot his trusty slingshot at anything and everything he could find. If he was really lucky, he'd be able to sling a stone at a wolf, or maybe a bear or a lion. That's much more challenging than small animals and insects. Then the Lord said to Samuel, rise up and anoint him. This is the one. David was appointed the next king. Can you imagine how surprised everyone was? I bet their jaws hit the ground. How could this possibly be right? Now, if you remember, the Philistines were assembling their forces, and their champion was Goliath. Goliath was 9 foot 9 inches tall. Oh boy, that's a big man. He had a helmet of bronze, a coat of armor that weighed 125 pounds. His spear weighed 15 pounds, plus he had other armor to protect his body. No wonder the Hebrew men were afraid of him. Goliath challenged Israel to fight with their best man. Ron?
First Samuel 17, 8 to 11. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? I am not a Philistine, and you are not the servants of Saul. Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified.
For 40 days, morning and evening, Goliath took a stand against Israel, making fun of them because Israel did not have a man willing to fight him. Meanwhile, young David was back doing his normal job of tending the sheep. Boring, boring, and boring. Remember, Samuel had already anointed David as the next king, but he wasn't king yet. Jesse sent for David so that he might take some food to his brothers at the front where Goliath was. When David arrived, he saw Goliath shouting his usual challenge. Ron? Stand closer to the mic.
David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?"
Word got back to Saul, and he sent for David. David said to Saul that he would fight Goliath. Saul told David he was not able to fight Goliath because David was still a young man, and Goliath had been a warrior since his youth. Ron, we'll read one more time.
1 Samuel 17, 34 to 37. But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord will be with you."
King Saul gave David his armor and sword, but David said he couldn't wear it because it was too big. So David took it off. Instead, he went down to the stream and chose 5 smooth stones and went off to meet Goliath with his trusty slingshot and 5 smooth stones. Now, you remember earlier that David would spend his time in the field tending sheep. I can just see him now. He would spend hours and hours with that slingshot. He would sling stones at anything and everything he could see. Maybe the target would be a snake or a lizard or scorpions. He would pick out a target and let the stone fly. David didn't know that he was honing his slingshot skills in order to one day slay a 9-foot-9-inch Philistine giant. Well, we all know the story. One shot to the middle of Goliath's head, and down Goliath went face first into the ground. Kaboom, just like a ton of bricks. I could see the dust flying when Goliath hit the ground. David was a hero. People cheered. An ordinary young man turned into an extraordinary young man by God. The disciples. Now let's look at the disciples. They are Simon Peter, Andrew, who is Simon Peter's brother, James, John, who is James's brother, Philip, Simon. Simon was a zealot, and some say that zealots were reckless in the worst kind of way and that they hated Rome. These men were ordinary fishermen, just ordinary men. Then there was Bartholomew, also known as Nathanael. Matthew, also known as Levi, and he was a tax collector. Thomas was a pessimist. He didn't believe until he saw. James, the younger son of Alphaeus. Jude, Thaddeus, was also known as Thaddeus, brother of James the Younger. He may have been an intense and violent nationalist with dreams of world power. Judas Iscariot, the traitor. Matthias, we've placed Judas. Little's known about him. Now, this group of people really look like ordinary men. Who would have guessed that Jesus would pick this small, ragtag group of ordinary men, ordinary fishermen, to become his disciples? God turned these ordinary men into extraordinary men who changed the world for God forever. It amazes me that the disciples spent so much time with Jesus, but they didn't understand him or his message. When Jesus was living, they always seem to be a little out of tune. Asking Jesus, what does this parable mean? Lord, teach us to pray. Really? How could they not understand after spending all that time with Jesus? Do you ever wonder how often Jesus must have been dumbfounded by them? Do you ever wonder why Jesus became upset with them? One can only imagine. But wait, at least they were faithful to him to the end, right? Yeah, not so fast. They all deserted him when the armed mob came to Gethsemane to arrest Jesus. The disciples feared for their own lives. Peter, who said he would never disown Jesus, even unto death, denied him three times that he had even known Jesus. I think this was the low point of Peter's life when he heard the rooster crow. He knew immediately what he had done. He had disowned Jesus three times in one night. And the other disciples weren't any better. Jesus was alone. Ron?
Matthew 28:16-18. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of age."
Jesus gave them the Great Commission. So if several fishermen, a tax collector, a pessimist, a violent nationalist, a zealot, and others could change the world for Christ, what can you do? I know that Ron Ware will agree with me. The biggest blessings come to us when we lead the singing and give the message of God's choice. Our hearts are filled to overflowing when we see many of the special needs people come up front, sing their hearts out. Several of them want the microphone so they can lead the singing. The singing may be a little off tune, but who cares? It's awesome. The lessons may be a little bit over their head to absorb, but they come anyway. The prizes may seem trivial to us, but they love them. It's their church, and they can contribute to the service. They are a blessing to us. One of the biggest blessings I've experienced is baptizing of the several of the God's choice people. I didn't feel worthy to perform this most sacred task. I asked several people and pastors if this would be wrong for me to do. I was like Moses, let someone else do it. However, to my surprise, they all encouraged me to do the baptisms. Today, I am so blessed by these baptisms. I have talked with the men who helped me, and to a man, they also were overwhelmed with joy and feeling so blessed to have been part of the baptisms. I'm so glad they got to experience this blessing too. It's an experience we will never forget. God is good and faithful if we just trust him. Trusting God is something that's usually not very easy to do. So think about this. How does God work through you? Be a better Christian today than you were yesterday, and be a better Christian tomorrow than you were today. Let me ask you, what is your extraordinary? What is God calling you to do? How is God working through you today to change you from ordinary to extraordinary? Maybe it's singing in the praise team. Maybe it's preaching a sermon. Maybe it's something, doing something nice for your neighbor. Nah, not the nice neighbor, but the one that's hard to live with, the one that complains all the time, the one that's just not very nice. You know who I'm talking about. Maybe it's, you can fill in the blank. It doesn't have to be something big like killing a 9-foot-9 giant. Don't be afraid to try. Become a Moses or a David, a disciple by changing the world around you just a little bit each day. Go out onto that limb. Trust God. Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. You don't have to do it perfectly. You'll be fine. Start today. Don't wait until tomorrow. Tomorrow will bring opportunities of its own. God bless you for your efforts and your faithfulness. Thank you.